Hello, my dear.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Jill.
Hang on,
how
Robert.
How you doing?
Hi, Robert. This is Jill Agisi, and welcome to Family Matters. I am so excited to have you all here tonight. We have a really incredible show for you with Jonty Hayes, who is the author of Monkey in the Middle, about putting children in the middle of divorce. And, boy, we know all about that, don't we, Robert Ferrer? How are you?
Doing great.
Well, I am so glad. I know you're coming.
You're
in Champaign, Illinois tonight, but you're coming over in a couple of weeks to talk about something pretty exciting for us. I mean, we work diligently on trying to make changes in divorce culture all across America every day, and there's so many people, just like Jonty and her partner Sarah, who are working towards that end. And Jonty was just saying, unfortunately, in 10 years and 15 years, we may see a difference, but it may not be the end that we're hoping for. We want eradication of children put in the middle of divorce. We want eradication of parental alienation. We want all of those things changed to protect our children. And really, Robert, you know, isn't it so important to you and I and Jonty, because when we're old and in nursing homes, we want kids in charge who have self-esteem, who don't have trust issues, who have ability to have relationships, who know who their parents and their heritage and their medical history were. We want those people in charge of our country, don't we, Robert?
Absolutely. And
yes.
It's important that if a child was born to two parents, and even at a very young age, the child develops an attachment to both parents, a primary attachment. And I just finished reading a study that showed that when a divorce occurs when the child is very young, under 5 years of age, the attachment deteriorates with one of the parents quite rapidly, and usually it's the non-residential parent.
Right.
And that can have
right.
a deleterious effect on children. And if the residential parent exhibits very strong gatekeeping tendencies, that tends to keep the other parent at arm's length from the child, it's even worse.
Absolutely. Now, you know, Robert, I was really remiss in my duties as a host in telling everybody, because I assume everybody knows who you are, the Henny Youngman of this show when it comes to divorce. You know, that's what Judge Michelle and I kind of call you. But you really are brilliant. And Robert Ferrer works at the University of Illinois, but has had experiences with divorce and alienation, and really is up on what's going on in every state, especially Illinois. He has this pulse on the family courts in Illinois and what's happening in the legislative arena. But more importantly, at this moment, and if you can do it, you know, synopsize this for me, Robert, because I don't want to keep Jonty waiting, because what she has to say is extremely important. But what you have to tell us today about the update with the DSM-5 and how it relates to parental alienation and what just happened, can you give us a synopsis of how that's going to affect our children and from a diagnosis standpoint?
Well, the DSM-5 doesn't mention directly parental alienation as a syndrome or as a title, or doesn't even mention parental alienation. But what it does, which is a big step forward, it created new categories that alludes to parental alienation, the behaviors associated with parental alienation, like if a child exhibits extreme animosity towards one parent. That's been now noted in the DSM-5. And there are other things that other areas that may help us in getting legislative opportunities to associate parental alienation based on the DSM-5 and their description. So I'm very optimistic, and there's some interesting opportunities there. And
that's exciting, Robert. You asked me today if I think it's still practical to work towards some legislation. legislation that's going to address that issue. And yes, I absolutely do. So let's get together very soon. I know you're coming to Springfield, Illinois to meet with the Parental Alienation Group on August 5th, the first Monday of every month we have our meeting here, and you're going to discuss the DSM-5. But let's get together then and talk about legislation that specifically addresses this issue, because it's so very important.
Right. The DSM-5 specifically mentions psychological child abuse. Which if parental alienation is not related to that, then nothing is. But
right.
As you and I know, a parent in, engaging in alienating behaviors is exactly in, what constitutes psychological child abuse. And we've mentioned it many times, and now here's an opportunity for us to tie it together and perhaps get it to the legislative floor.
And as I've said so many times, for all the things we're publicized for in Illinois and all the things we do wrong politically, we're kind of getting family law right. So let's continue to be a forward-thinking state as far as children are concerned and try to save some souls of some children in the future and really move forward to make an impact and a change in divorce culture. Robert, thank you
My pleasure. Once again for
the update, and I'll see you soon. And keep listening, and I'll see you in the chat room.
Sounds like a plan.
Thanks, Robert.
Have a good show tonight.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Well, my next guest is, as I said, Jonty Hayes, the author of Monkey in the Middle, and we're going to talk to her tonight about how children are put in the middle of divorce, as so many of us have had experience with that. We can give firsthand information, but Jonty has written a book, not a workbook, but a fun book for kids and one for parents specifically. So Jonty, welcome.
Thank you so much.
I am so glad you're here tonight. You're a graduate of Florida State.
Yes, I am.
University in 1993, clinical social work. You have won awards, which we're going to hear about with the Monkey in the Middle series, and your expertise is in crisis stabilization, stabilization, victim advocate, troubled teens, anger management, survivors of sexual abuse, parenting, marital and family, depression, anxiety, divorce and custody, and on and on and on. How do you make it through a day? You know, sometimes I talk to people all day long about parental alienation, and you just, there's days you just want to shut down.
Oh, I can relate to that.
And it's a sad world to be in, but you and I are here to try to make a difference.
Yes, I was going to say, and that's all that we can do is just to keep on trying.
You got to keep on trying. I told somebody today I was meeting with some people about a movie that I'm doing about divorce, and you know I said, I feel sad that I've been working and really catapulted myself to the top of this parental alienation arena. I've been working in this for 10 years, and I still have people call me and say, do you know what this is called? I found it on the internet. It's parental alienation. And I think, gosh, I don't work hard enough. I don't work hard enough. If there are still people who don't get it, then we got to keep plugging away. So we contacted each other a couple of months ago, and you sent me this great series of books that you've done called Monkey in the Middle.
Mm-hmm. Monkey in the Middle Divorce Series.
Yes, Monkey in the Middle Divorce Series, and I think that's important to put in there because when you Google it, you may get other things when you put Monkey in the Middle. So Divorce Series is important, and you have a co-author in Sarah Ulmer, correct?
Yes, I do.
And so let's talk about what got you, you know, all the things that I listed that you do all day long, what got you into this field and why did you decide this was the way to go?
Honestly, I don't think I picked it. I believe it kind of picked me. You know, I've been in practice for a long time. As you can see, I have a lot of different areas that I have expertise in. And I've always had a specialty in working with children anyways. I live in a small town, and the town I live in, we don't have a lot of therapists that do specialize in working with children. And, you know, I guess probably the way I also got involved with it was meeting with some different attorneys. We were attempting to do the collaborative law thing here in St. Augustine, and I think that was a bit of a segue for that. Unfortunately, we weren't able to manifest that to something that would continue in our town. But I did... I did meet some attorneys, and I did start getting some referrals, and it just seemed like once I got one or two children, you know, who were going through divorce, I was just inundated with it. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I became one of the only few people left in town who would even see that, would even do that kind of work. So, but the more that I got into it and just working with these children and really just seeing things through their eyes and what they were going through, I just really wanted to be able to tell their story. And I want to do it for the parents, too, because I really do believe that at the heart of all this, even with the most angry person, even with the, you know, the most severe narcissist or borderline, I really believe at the heart of it is a parent who really does want what's best for their children. I just think that sometimes we have to really dig deep to find that. And it's something I just really wanted to do for children and for parents is to be able to whatever I could do to help them through that process and for the parents to be able to, you know, to transcend that, you know, that anger that they were experiencing and being able to step outside of that hurt, angry spouse and step inside, you know, to be the super parent to their children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you address, because so oftentimes I will have people call me and say, look, do you know a therapist in this area that can help me with this issue specifically? I mean, I work in parental alienation consistently, constantly. So that's the question I get. But don't you feel that there are so many therapists who lack the training to work with children that they really do more harm than good to the child through the divorce process?
If they're not educated in just the whole issue with, you know, the divorce, post-divorce process and all the dynamics
Absolutely.
That are involved with that
right.
and the whole, you know, the whole court system. I mean, sure, I think that they definitely can do more harm than good without having some special training in that.
Well, and I think that there's so many mental health professionals that need to recognize that and really, you know, step back. When a therapist has been treating a child for months and months and months and they're still not seeing the other parent or still having a very a volatile relationship with the other parent, I almost feel like I'm not doing any good, so I need to pull myself out of the situation. And really, in the code of ethics that you all take when mm-hmm. you sign on to do this, isn't it a fact that you should just step back and say, you know, maybe you should see somebody else?
Absolutely. And there's been a few times where I feel like I've, you know, that I've worked so hard and we're going round and round with clients and that we're stuck, and I've referred it to some colleagues who, and they've done the same for me. Just, you know, thinking, hey, maybe a fresh face, maybe a new person, at least mm-hmm. if, you know, even if it's having that new person involved, is it going to make any changes? At least having that, it just is more, I think, collaborative information, collateral information that, you know, that the client isn't wanting to work with you, that there's, you know, little motivation
okay.
for them to...
Well, let me ask you this, because a large part of my listening audience has dealt with the experience of parental alienation. So how, when that presents to you, what is your, just in a quick kind of hypothetical situation, how do you deal with that issue?
If I start to recognize that there's parent alienation?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I just take the approach of just being very direct about it and what I'm seeing. You know, if I'm seeing it because I'm working with the children and I'm starting to see that, I go to the parents and I tell them my concern about how their child is experiencing this divorce. And I may not use the word parent alienation right away, but I do discuss how the child experiences that. And then when I need to, I will use that term in saying attorneys might start using that term, parent alienation, if you're not careful. So obviously,
if you're not careful. Exactly.
Yeah, if you're not careful, you're going to set yourself up for that. You know, I think it depends. It depends on the family. It depends on the parents. There's some parents that I've had to be a little bit more pointed with and very direct with, and there's some that I've been able to be maybe a little bit softer with than that. I think it depends on the level of alienation that's going on. The how invested the parent is in that. I think there are cases where, and maybe I'm not going to use completely the word alienation right now, but mm-hmm. where parents are sabotaging the relationship between the child and the other parent, and they're not doing it with the intention of, this is what I'm setting out to do.
Right. Very subconscious, very mm-hmm. subconscious. Would you ever, and there's a question from the chat room, would you ever meet with both parents together? Because so often in these situations, we find that the therapist immediately aligns with the parent who gets to them first, who usually is the alienating parent. So would you ever consider bringing in both parents so that you can weigh and see exactly what's going on?
Well, you know, kind of the model that I have used over the past couple of years is I really see everyone in the family. I want to see the child, and I won't see one parent without seeing the other.
Great.
And I'll talk to them separately when I need to. I'll talk to them together often. I'll want to meet with their child because I feel like, you know, if anything's going to really reach a parent and really, really help them escape out of that whole anger and the ego, it's hearing the words of their child. And the child, and you know how the child is feeling in their words, and the parent knows their child's words. So I do like to be able to work with the children as well when I can, and working in that area because I found it's been very, very helpful.
Okay, well, let's talk about the series Monkey in the Middle. How did you come up with this concept for the Monkey in the Middle divorce series?
Well, you know, I really, like I said, I've been doing this for a lot of years, and I just after a couple of years, I just started to see these common themes, these challenges that these families would go through, and that sometimes they would really get stuck in it. Sometimes it would create a lot of problems. Sometimes it would just stall the process. And I wanted to write a book that was for the children and for the parents about these different challenges that I saw that they were going through, and that's what I end up basing my kids' rights on, which is 12 kids' rights. When I was thinking about writing it, I started looking at it, and I was thinking, this is going to be a huge book. If you want to put all these in there and you really want to tell the story and you really want to give it the detail that it deserves, it's going to be humongous. And what kid's going to want a humongous book? And quite frankly, what parent's going to want something mm-hmm. like that? It's overwhelming. It's intimidating. And then I was thinking that, you know, and I really wanted to because, you know, with this kids' rights, these 12 challenges that you see families quite often go through, I think that they're touched upon in a lot of other books, but they're touched upon very briefly. And I don't feel like it really gives the time and attention to really help a child and a parent work through that particular challenge. So I ended up deciding to break it down.
Did you anticipate that when you wrote the book series or the first book that parents would sit down with the child and actually work through the book?
It's funny because it's evolved over time in terms of what of what I have visualized. Probably first, sure, I thought about the parent sitting down with the child. I think that the children's books are great for the parents to read, not necessarily read it with their child, but read it, because one of the unique things about the books is the characters are so in-depth and they're so involved. Mm-hmm. I think that the parent really has an opportunity to see themselves through a child's eyes.
Which talks about book three, which we'll get to in a second. Let's talk about it in a minute. But I want to go back to the kids' rights because I think it's so important. And when I talk to parents, you know, all the time, and in speeches that I give, I talk about giving that child the right to speak up, knowing that they can say, I don't want to choose. I want to love my mom and my dad. So why don't we just go down? There's 12 kids' rights. Can you talk about those for just a second?
Yes. Well, the first one is I have the right to understand what's happening and knowing that everything's going to be okay. And that kind of goes beyond just explaining, well, mommy and daddy aren't going to live in the same house, but you'll have two beds and, you know, but you'll go to the same school. This really speaks more to the emotional climate in the home. I've had a lot of kids come into counseling, and they are so overwhelmed and paralyzed by the emotions they see their parents experiencing. And, you know, children, they don't have the benefit of experience of knowing that emotions flow and there's times that you go through that are hard and then things go back to normal. And so a lot of these children are coming in thinking, my mom is always, for the rest of my life, going to be crying, or my dad's always going to be angry, or my parents are always going to be withdrawn. So I really wanted something that helped the children understand that the emotions are not something to be afraid of. Let's understand the emotional environment, and I normalize it. And I talk to the kids in the first book, and I tell them, you know what? Something sad is happening. Something devastating is happening to your parents. They should be feeling sad. They should be feeling kind of angry. It's normal. It's okay. But guess what? It doesn't last forever. And I use metaphors in each story to help the child understand that. And in this particular book, I use a metaphor of a magnifying glass. And I have a magnifying glass over different feelings of how they're really enlarged. And I kind of use that as a way of explaining there are certain times in life where people are going to be more angry or more upset, but it's okay. So that was really the basis for book number one. Then I had book number two, which is I have the right to my feelings and permission to express them. And that was kind of like what you said about being able to speak up about how they feel. Number three, you know, hear happy words about my mom and my dad. Number four is I have the right to feel safe, and that can be feeling safe emotionally or feeling safe physically. I had one family where the father in front of the kids said he was going to kill the mother's new boyfriend, and these kids were devastated. I mean, they think that, is someone going to die? Is my dad going to go to jail? That particular family was the basis for that one. Mm-hmm. I have the right to obey the rules at each house. Six is to be a carefree child and not be stuck with adult stuff. And I think as you and I see, a lot of children, they become immersed in what's happening with the adults and just the whole process of it, and they get very overwhelmed and they feel responsible and they become parentified. And
right, I was just going to say, parentified, and they're mm-hmm. reading legal documents and they're, you know, trying to make adult decisions about something that they should have nothing to do with.
Exactly. So number seven, I have the right to take care of myself and let others help me. And that's really about when I see parents as they're really immersed with the grief and just being very overwhelmed by everything that's happening. You know, sometimes parents, we're not as attentive to our kids as we need to be. And the book talks about, you know, what are some ways that you can take care of yourself as well. And it's okay to reach out to your grandma if you need to, or it's okay to reach out to an aunt or uncle or a neighbor. So that mm-hmm. that discusses that.
You know, Jonty, I want to just interject something there. I found through my own personal process and through all the others that I see that others are hesitant to step in and be involved. When it's immediate family through divorce and some families have never experienced divorce, mm-hmm. grandparents don't know how to handle it. They just want to make sure that their child is taken care of and that their grandchildren are okay and resilient through the process. But there are so many people, church members, pastors, friends that have been with that family for a lifetime who are hesitant to step in and mm-hmm. say, you know what? This is what you can do, and this is how it is, and talk to the parents and say, you shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't be putting your child in the middle. And if people would speak up, I think that would really shore up what you and I are trying to do in a change in divorce culture.
I completely agree. And you know what else? That's why these books are so perfect, because
yep.
a grandparent who may not know how to talk to their grandchild about it, first of all, can read the book and understand what the kid's going through.
Yes.
And then they can, the way the book, the therapeutic part in the back is set up is it's therapy sessions. And it's laid out as such that, I mean, even a grandparent could do it with the grandchild.
Right.
So number eight, I have the right to enjoy my time with each parent. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Number nine, I have the right to have a family that sets a good example. That is regarding extended family. I had a case where a very nice family, professional family, met at the airport. They were exchanging the kids during vacations, and there was a new wife there, and the old wife or the ex-wife's mother was also there, and she ended up spitting in the face of the new wife in front of the kids.
Oh.
So that book is, yes, I have the right to a family who sets a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Number 10, get used to my parents being divorced before I am ready to meet the special friend. And then number 11, I have the right to like the new special friend. And then the last one is I have the right to say goodbye. And that's really about when you see some families that, a parent will move or they meet someone and they get married and they move on. And that speaks more to that. And that's kind of a segue for a whole nother series of books I would like to do. But anyways. So that's the kids' rights.
And number eight, enjoy my time with each parent. I think so many parents don't understand, and they may be doing it subconsciously or consciously, when children are going off for the visitation, which I hate that word, with the other parent, you know, they'll say, oh, my gosh, Mommy, I'll miss you so much. I'll probably just cry, and I won't sleep the whole weekend. So you're laying a whole plate of guilt on this poor child who's going to go try to have a weekend with her father and worry about you not sleeping or being upset the whole time they're gone.
Exactly. It's so funny because in book eight, Max, the main character, he's going to see his father. And actually, the parents in this story, they haven't really done anything to do that, but Max is such a sensitive child. He projects and he thinks, my mom will be lonely when I'm not with her. So he tries to get his friend Marley to come and see her and do all this stuff and ends up to be this big fiasco. But the mom is like thinking in her mind, wow, Max is going. She's like, wow, I'll have a time. She has like little bubbles of seeing herself like taking a bath and sleeping in. And, you know, so the child can see that, you know, it's okay to leave the parent, that it's, you know, that parents sometimes it's good for them to have time to themselves. So,
well, I think I'm looking at the chat room now, and my wonderful friend Robert, who was just on a second ago, has added a number 13. We may want to go to 14 to your rights page, and is I have a right to have both parents support me fully in my relationship with them.
Absolutely.
I love that, Robert.
Isn't that really the cornerstone for all of this is having parents who recognize and believe it is important that you have a relationship with your other parent?
Well, that's what's so important. And when I look at something like when my partner, Judge Michelle Lawrence, you know, writes a book called The Good Karma Divorce, and in that book she says, children are not resilient through divorce. They do not make it like we think they do. And I think people have the thought process that you know, I'm going to go through this and I'll make it, and when I'm out on the other side, my kids will be too. But they never think about really those poor kids are packing up and moving Wednesdays and every other weekend, and they're, you know, I love the concept of, in Chicago, judges are doing it, the concept of nesting, where kids are awarded the house and the parents have to come and go. What a great
concept.
That
is amazing. I've seen that happen one time here, and I've actually tried to suggest that to some parents, and they looked at me like I was crazy.
You're crazy.
But yeah, but I love that idea.
I think it's perfect. And those kids, their clothes stay in their drawers. They don't have to have two sets of anything. And the parents come and go, and it puts the real onus on them to move back and forth. Their decision to break up the family, so they're the ones that should have to be moving around. And
you're so right, because the kids didn't choose this, and kids think parents, you know, you think that the kids can be resilient. Well, adults have a better chance of being resilient than kids do.
That's right.
I love that idea.
That's right. And it really, you know, it really gives, divorce is so easy these days. It really puts the parents in a position to understand the depth and the magnitude of what they've done to this family unit.
I love that.
So let's push for that.
The next time I have a situation like that, I am going to recommend that. And if I make a recommendation like that to the court, I'm going to say that, well, she recommended it on her show. So
yeah, absolutely. And they can listen to the show. But, you know, here's the thing, Johnny. You have to have two parents that are willing to do that. I mean, you could never have a situation with a narcissistic, you know, with a sociopath and somebody else who's trying to make it work. You can't have – it's got to be two even-keeled parents that are going to know that this is what's best for their children, to raise meaningful, contributing people who are going to grow up and mature and be really a great part of society in the future. So, it doesn't happen in every situation, but you've got parents out there who are thinking reasonably about this. They're there. I just don't deal with them.
I have parents that come and see me on their own, or they're going to get a divorce and come and see me, and obviously those are the ones you have a lot of hope for. You know, unfortunately, a good percentage of the clients that come to see me are the ones who have been divorced 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and now the judge is just saying, you know what, now I'm telling you have to go to therapy, and we'll just let therapists not decide, but I want to hear what the therapist has to say. And, of course, you know, you're going to have your narcissist or your people, you know, the personality disorders who are in and out of the legal system constantly.
Right. Well, I think if we keep working on this and plugging away, we're gonna really make a change. We've talked about kids' rights and how they were created. How do you incorporate the use of metaphors into the series, and why did you write it that way?
You know, the reason, you know, one of the reasons for using the metaphors is to help a child, you know, to integrate the information. And I think that we all understand that, you know, when a child's given an image, they can understand a concept better, and then they can use that. It helps to support the underlying message, like the magnifying glass, you know, over someone's feelings. A picture, you know, a feelings poster, and the magnifying glass. You have one picture where someone kind of looks angry, and then you have the magnifying glass, and they look really angry. And I think that that's something that kids can really, they can remember, and they can integrate that. So I wanted to use metaphors for that. And really, I didn't even plan on using metaphors until I wrote book three first, actually, with the magic glasses. And then I thought, wow, this is really cool. And I was like, I could use metaphors for a lot of things. And then it just really started to come to me. So metaphors for that, things like a magnifying glass or glasses. Children always see magnifying glasses or glasses. So, you know, you can even for some, you know, how cheap could you go to the dollar store for and get some magnifying glasses and get some glasses and just give it to them and let them have something in their hand to use. You know, I also used metaphor in the parent's book, which is the hurt, angry spouse, and then the super parent, which has, like, in the illustration, has, like, a little picture of a cape, and the parent's the super parent, mm-hmm. to help them be able to integrate that. Because in the moment, when they're faced with, am I going to react from ego and be angry, or am I going to act from the super parent and do this for my child, you know, hopefully they'll have that image in their mind. And I'm not saying it's going to work miracles and it's like that's all they need, but I think that in those moments they need all the support and help they can get and encouragement.
Absolutely. I'll have to send you an article that Judge Michelle wrote that it was called Being a Superhero Parent.
I would love that.
So you can read that. I want you to talk about each book because you've written three books, but there are nine mm-hmm. in the series. And then an
there's 11.
Okay, there's 11. Mm-hmm. Now, does the 11 include the book Two Parents, or is that in addition?
Okay. And actually, there's okay. I've completely written 11. They're all finished. I just only have the first three published because of working through illustrations and things like that.
Yep.
The 12th one is one that I'm in the process of writing. That was about I Have the Right to Say Goodbye. For each book, for each children's book, based on each kid's right, like I have the right to understand, I have the right to my feelings, there's a corresponding parent companion that goes with that.
Got it.
So,
okay.
So you're working with the kids, and then you're also working with the parents. And I did that, too, because I don't know, Jill, you know, what you experienced, but, you know, I'll have kids in counseling with me, and the parents are not in counseling, or maybe they've gone to, you know, like the mandated four-hour class they have to go to. But it's very rare that you see everyone getting counseling. You know, usually I'm working with just one part of the family or another. So I wanted this because, and, you know, a therapist, you can't be all places at all times. And honestly, families can't afford to have 10 hours of counseling a week.
Yeah.
So if I was going to be working with a child and I see they're dealing with this particular issue, like mom and dad are saying negative things about one another, even if I can't have a parent in consistent counseling with me, I can be giving them this book and telling them outside of the sessions, this is what I want you working on.
Would you prefer, Jonty, that the family comes to you as a group, assuming that you can get everybody? Now, in a parental alienation situation, you can't get that alienating parent to come. But you would prefer integrative family therapy anytime you could get it, right?
I actually would. And then, you know, kind of like play it by ear. And I may want to see just the child for a couple of sessions alone and then maybe just work with, you know, one parent or both of them and just, you know, kind of just feel the process out. And because in the moment, in that time, you kind of know what you need to do.
Yeah, yeah. And how successful, I mean, what's your success rate with integrative family therapy? And I don't want to put you on the spot, but would you say that you see a positive outcome in most cases that you deal with when you have willing participants?
When I have clients who come in voluntarily, when I have clients who come in earlier in the process, obviously when I have people who have already been divorced for 10 years, I would say my success rate with that is very low.
Mm-hmm.
When I have families coming in on their own volition because they haven't been court ordered, because they're coming in with the primary motivation of, as I want to, we want to work for our child, you know, I would say, gosh, I mean, it's, you know, it's almost always successful, mm-hmm. you know, because they're willing to put the work in. They're willing to, you know, they're willing to take the tools that you're giving them. They're willing to use them. And some, you know, it works to different degrees than others, but when I have people coming in, and again, they're not court ordered and they haven't, we're not dealing with some other psychological issues going on, you know, I think there's a lot of success that happens with that.
Good, good. I'm glad you're out there, and I wish that you could be a model for so many therapists across the country, because, you know, when people call and ask me, I'm hard pressed to find somebody in their area in the middle of Wyoming
mm-hmm.
that is going to help them, because there's just not that many out there that are well versed in the area of dealing with children through divorce and trying to really, really help them come out healthy emotionally
yeah.
and psychologically on the other side. Okay, about the books now. So they're not, you call them fun books, and I like that. They're not a workbook, because this shouldn't be work, although subliminally it is work. We have
right.
to try to make a difference, but you're telling these kids they're fun books. And so let's talk about the characters. You have Marley and Max, you have
mm-hmm.
Miss Daisy. Let's talk about each of them and why are they so special to this series?
Well, okay, so Max is the main character in the book. Max's parents are getting divorced, and Mona and Tom, and Max's best friend is, her name is Marley. Her name is Marley. And
mm-hmm.
Max is, you know, he's funny, he's quirky, he gets easily, you know, overwhelmed, and he, you know, Marley's kind of his grounding force of like, okay, you know, she has like a stop sign that says like, calm down, let's just think about this. Miss Daisy obviously is a therapist who works with him throughout the book. The characters in the book, they're always the same, which I love, and I feel like the characters really develop over time, and I feel like they're characters that are also, you know, they're realistic, they're hip. You know, they have their iPods and their skateboards,
mm-hmm.
and they play video games, and, you know, they do things that kids can relate to.
Kids can really identify with these characters.
Oh, absolutely.
They're about today.
They're about today, and they're real. I mean, they're funny. Like Max sometimes just does some things that just is really kind of messed up, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and the, you know, the kids can kind of laugh at it, and Marley's there to kind of pick him up, and he goes to Miss Daisy. And I think what I love about these books is no one of these books are perfect, including the parents, and throughout the series, the parents really, they're those parents that they want to try, they want to do the right thing, but you know, they're human, and sometimes they're going to make mistakes, and their emotions are going to get the best of them, and Miss Daisy's kind of the one there who says, it's okay, the fact that you recognize it, the fact that you have
and
the
Miss,
intention
Miss
of wanting
Daisy,
to try.
She's the therapist.
Yes.
In the book.
Yes.
And I think it's important that you introduce that character, because children don't know. I mean, generally,
mm-hmm.
if you're living your life and going along on your skateboard and, you know, your iPod and your video games, you don't know that there's a therapist out there waiting for you.
Correct. And Miss Daisy, she comes in the second book, and she is brought in because Max, and this is the one about having the right to express my feelings and understand my feelings, Max has, he got angry at his little brother, Mickey, and he pushed him off of his bike. And his mom and dad start to recognize that Max is just, he's, you know, he's getting angry more easily. He's acting it out more often. And they go to Miss Daisy, and she says, well, you know, this probably is part of what's happening between the two of you. So, you know, that's how Miss Daisy's brought in, and she's in every story.
I like her. I liked her. You know, the only thing I didn't like is Miss Daisy said to Max, nothing lasts forever. And I think there are some children that read that. And again, I'm looking at a little smaller piece of the pie. You're very
mm-hmm.
broad. I'm very specific. When you look at children of divorce who have lost a loving
yeah.
relationship with one parent well into adulthood, it does last forever. And
yeah.
and you've got parents who have broken hearts and children who don't know half of themselves, and it does last forever. So those words to me were they stung.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like them. And so I'm just telling you that I don't like
oh,
them.
Oh, no. I can certainly. It's funny because, you know, Sarah and I, my co-author, we talked about that after the book was written and published. And we went back and we were looking at them again. And we talked about that because – honestly, there are some parents that they get very invested in their story and they do stay in that state. And, what we were doing is we were trying to talk about just, you know, when you're feeling really, really angry in that moment.
Right.
That doesn't last
okay.
forever. But I do understand what you're saying because we kind of picked up on the same thing.
I just don't want people to think that I'm, you know, or this situation that I talk about continuously is
mm-hmm.
is something that is, you know, 1 in 10 or 1 in 20.
Right.
This is an epidemic, and this
mm-hmm.
happens every day. And there are children, hundreds of thousands of children, that don't have relationships with
mm-hmm.
parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins. And so that, while I understand what you just said, you know, it makes perfect sense about the anger issue and it not lasting forever. I could be misconstrued. So I just want people to know that this is out there and it's a big part of what we do in this divorce world.
Well, you're absolutely right. And again, when we're talking about, you know, PAS, perialienation syndrome, I mean, that you're right. That is a very different that's a whole other ball of wax when you're dealing with that. And, yes, that is something that very well can last forever. You know, for when that happens, that's usually, you know, part of the motivation of the alienating parent is to make
mm-hmm.
sure it lasts forever.
Right, right, which is horrible. Just a
yes,
horrible disease that's meant to be suffered in silence by parents who can't see their children. So so the characters are terrific. And you know, I have to tell you, the illustrations that go with the book are, just not beautiful. Beautiful is not the word. They're, I want to use a hip world word, and I don't
mm-hmm.
know what that is, rad, cool. You know, they're very bright. The characters are kind of skateboardy looking guys.
Yep.
You think they'd be on Venice Beach or, you know, something like that. It's just a really good illustration. I love it.
Well, Lisa Kahn, my illustrator who did that, at the time that she did these illustrations, I think she was only 20 years old. And she had graduated from college. She went to FSU, majored in art. She's living up in Pittsburgh now, working as an artist. And, I mean, she's all like maybe 23. And if you look at the picture of her in the back of the book, the illustrator, you know what? She is really hip. She is really cool. She's like really groovy. I mean, she's
mm-hmm.
so you can
groovy.
See how that kind of art would come from her. And she did. I mean, I don't think these books would be near what they are if we didn't have the illustrations to go along.
How did you select that? I mean, did you have people submit things to you and did you go through things, or was that the first thing you saw and said, that's it, that's Max, that's Marley, that's Miss Daisy, let's go with it?
It's funny because everything and how this whole series has come together has been so magical and so little effort put into producing them. My co-author Sarah, she had written a book series called the Wise Train series for younger children, and she had found Lisa and used her as her illustrator. So we already knew that who we wanted to use. Now the way that Sarah met Lisa is she just was in a local cafe that we have here in St. Augustine and was talking to one of the waiters, and she just mentioned that she was, you know, wanting to write a children's book, and, you know, she was looking for some illustrators, and he was like, oh, well, my really good friend is an artist. That was it. And then Lisa wasn't even living in town when we were doing these, and so what we would do is we just literally, we would just send her the manuscripts and kind of lay it out for what we wanted, and she would just then draw the illustrations, FedEx them back to us. We'd look and say, that looks good, or let's tweak this. And so we only actually even were, along with our graphic designers, in each other's presence, literal presence, maybe twice throughout this whole process. Everything else mm-hmm. was just done just that way, and everything just always came together and fit together.
I feel like that about everything that I do as well, that it's sort of predestined, that whatever
mm-hmm.
is supposed to happen, happens, you know, and it kind of all falls into place with very little effort. I'm not saying there's no anguish in it, and I'm not saying there's no hard work in it, but things come. You have to develop them when you get them, but
mm-hmm.
they seem to come in an easy way with this work. I think that whatever higher being you believe in, mine happens to be, you know, God and his son and the Holy Spirit. But I think that whatever higher being you believe in, there is a plan for this to be maybe
mm-hmm.
not eradicated, but some relief to come for some of these kids and for these family court issues that exist all across the United States. We just have to make changes in family courts and the way judges think and legislative changes. And there's so it's like a multi-layered solution that has to come. And this book series is part of that solution.
Well, and I think, too, it's so important that, you know, when you say multi-layered, I think it's also like a multiple population. We have to educate the attorneys. We have to educate the therapists.
Yeah.
We have to educate the school system to be able to pick up on that, these divorce recovery groups, the judges, you know, guidance counselors. And I think
Where are you putting this book right now? Are you trying to get it into any of those outlets to make a difference?
Well, that's what I would love to do. I mean, honestly, what I would love to do is I would love to have these books be part of the mandated class that, you know, now
right.
we have every state, every county, and every state has to do the, you know, children and divorce class. And
mm-hmm.
I would love to have these books be incorporated into that to use with the parents and with the kids, or even set up as its own. I just don't know that 4 hours, I think it's a great introduction, but I was talking to, I was doing another radio show last night, and we were talking about it, and she said, you know, it's like going into rehab and to detox for 40 hours and coming out and thinking that you're going to be able to stay in recovery.
Yeah.
You know, it's a process. It's a management. It's a program that you have to work. So I would love to see it be done, the book. She's like that. I would love, love, love to one day just actually have it put in a video series.
That would be terrific.
I would love for attorneys to have these. I would love for mediators to have these. I would love for, you know, these guidance counselors or counselors at school to have them. I would love for a parent coordinator to have this and say, okay, I feel like you're really getting stuck in such and such issue. You know, you can't understand that your child has the right to follow the rules at your ex-husband's house. And we're getting stuck. Take this book. Read the child's book. You know, see it through their eyes. And just have something really easy to pass off because they already have their jobs already, you know, so complex anyways. So just have something like that to pass off to them. And bring it back to me next week and tell me what you learned.
Well, and I assume you've done this, but when Judge Michelle and I wrote the work, it is a workbook. It's not a fun book. Workbook, Parental Alienation 911. And when we wrote that book, we sent it out to as many people as we could in the mental health and legal profession to try to get them to take a look at it. Have you done that? I mean, for nothing. You know, we love to sell it, but I'm not about the selling. I just want people to see it.
I definitely have been sending them out, especially to people in my community. I definitely want to start with my community first.
Yeah.
And I sent them out. And now that our books also are going to be available on iBooks, Kindle, Nook, that's going to be something that's going to be even easier to – and I think that's actually what I had done for you, Jill, is I had sent you
– Yes.
The iBook copy, and so that's going to also be something. But, yes, I mean, yes, like you said, I'd love to sell books, but you know what? I want more than selling books. I just want to get these books in people's hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if something comes of it and you can pay yourself back for all the work and all the time that you've put in, then great. But at this point, you know, I just want to see a change. And and if that means that we have to give our time and give our time and give our time and still be able to eat, then I'm good with that. I don't care.
Because we do reap the rewards of that. I mean, the way that I look at it is you know, I have teenage kids. We have our youth is our future, and if we have parents who going through this process are really, really hurting our children. It's like I think you had said at the beginning of the show, do we want to be in nursing homes having angry, you know, adults because of how they, you know, of
right.
this whole process.
Who,
now
who
I'm not taking care of
decisions.
Us, but taking care of the world.
Right.
So
taking
on some level, it is self-serving. I want to make sure that there are healthy people out there later on for the world that my children are stepping into, that other children are stepping into, and that I'm going to be in.
And what so many people don't realize, the way you treat your children when you're going through divorce carries over to the way they treat their children
yes, it
when
does.
they have children, and they don't understand that this is a generational thing that happens over. And I mean, I have parents who have great grandchildren that are alienated from their children. You know, I mean, it's a horrible, horrible
thing. It's an epidemic.
It is. It absolutely is. What do you think the future of Monkey in the Middle is? How would you like to see the series expand and evolve?
Well,
the video. I mean, you said you wanted in video series.
Yes.
Obviously.
You know, you first asked me, do you see parents sitting down with the children? At first when I wrote it, I had that in mind. And then what I really saw with it is, you know, in terms of what is your bullseye? Where do you want to start first and then work out? And I would say really it's with therapists, giving it to therapists. Because as you said, there's a lot of therapists who work with kids, but they're not really trained in this area. And there's a lot involved. And so why not put this in their hands? So they are having more education. So they have something that's laid out for them.
Perfect, John T. And, you know, I think as with the legal profession, in the mental health profession, you have to work through egos, trying to tell people that you need to change, you need to do things differently. It's a difficult proposition for some people. And if you can just get this to them, let them read it leisurely and say, that's something I might introduce into my practice because I don't really understand. I mean, I come across people who don't understand anything about divorce and children in the mental health profession.
Sure.
And they're thinking about it from the adult way of thinking, and you can't, or using the Anna Freud play model to try to fix these kids, doing more harm than good, as we said. So I think this is absolutely terrific. I want to get, because we just have a few minutes left, time flies, and you've been such a great guest, but I want to talk about how you have utilized social media and crowdfunding to help you get these first books out there. So you've published how many with crowdfunding?
We published and we fully published and had illustrated two. Actually,
two.
Wait. No, yeah, the next two. Yeah, because we already had done the first and the Parent Companion.
You did the first one. Right.
We used Kickstarter, and I had never really heard of it before, and just kind of came upon. I can't remember how I came upon it, but came upon it. And now this was in 2012, and basically the way that Kickstarter works is you can pick between 3 weeks or 6 weeks, I can't remember, but a certain date to try and raise a certain amount of money. And if you raise it, you get it. And if you don't raise it, then you don't get anything. Mm-hmm. So it's a one-time thing that you get to do, and we were so fortunate. We had people who really just pitched in, and, you know, we went over what our goal was, and so we had the money to not only produce the books, but also we'd like to do a lot of conferences. I would love to go to, you asked what do I want to see with the series. Love to go to conferences where they're dealing with parent alienation, you know, with lawyers or therapists or mediation conferences, and just be there to sell the books. So we also had some stuff put out for what we could use in conferences for that. So we were really fortunate. I suggest anyone who really is looking to finance something really creative that they look into that crowdfunding, because it was amazing.
And there's a lot of people who don't know what that even means. And crowdfunding basically is, there's a couple of different outlets on the internet, in Tug, in Indiegogo, in the one you used, which is escaping me now because I'm having
Kickstarter.
Kickstarter. Gosh, I couldn't remember. Kickstarter. And they all have kind of different parameters that you have to work within. But what you do is you put out your product and allow people to, or ask people, not allow people, ask people to participate in helping you see your project through to an end goal. And I'm looking at your page. You raised 117% of your goal, which is amazing. So you must have some incredible, I don't know if you went beyond your immediate sphere of friends and family to do this, but
had strangers. We had people who were like, oh my gosh, I went through divorce, and it wasn't just people that were near and dear to us. It was people that we didn't even know.
Isn't that incredible? Because as we said, divorce touches every single person, whether you've been through it yourself, it's a family member, it's a friend. Everybody knows somebody that's gone through some horrific divorce story. And I think it's so important that if we all connect in the big, small world of divorce and parental alienation, that we're eventually going to make a cohesive network across the United States and globally
mm-hmm.
that is going to really, really let the voice be heard that needs
right.
to be heard in
zero tolerance.
Course. Yeah, zero tolerance. That's nesting and zero tolerance. That's
mm-hmm.
what we want. So, how can people? Are you gonna set up another crowdfunding campaign?
No, it was a one shot deal, and we did it. And so, like I said, we were really thankful for how it worked out. It was a really fun experience. So no, I mean that's a, and I don't know if the other ones work that way, but I know that Kickstarter does, and I'm pretty sure the other ones do too. It's a one shot deal, and it's really meant just to kind of like give you the kickstart, get you over the hump.
Yeah, okay, but you still got all these books left you need to put out. So what are we
yes.
going to do about that?
Tell people to buy books. Go on Amazon.
Buy
go on
books.
My website, you know, bewholecounseling.com. You can go on the website for Sarah and I's other company, which is called B, and it's B dash or slash dash attitude.com. And then, of course, Amazon.com, and it's just, you know, just type in Monkey in the Middle series.
Mm-hmm. How do you do you know Richard Warshak by chance?
I don't know him personally, no.
Okay. Well, I do. But you know about his Welcome Back Pluto DVD. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
You should take a look at it, Jonty. You know, it's pretty comparable to what you're doing, only very specific to my issue, you know, alienation of children. But
uh-huh.
it's named such because we had Pluto, the planet, one day, and the next day we didn't, meaning a parent, you
That's
know, and a child,
right.
and then it's gone. But you should take a look at it. And
I will.
Was going to ask how you think maybe we'll come back on and have you think how this compares to what you're doing. But I think they really work kind of hand in hand with one another as far as a concept goes. I think you both kind of had the same thing in mind, or Dr. Amy Baker's books. I don't know if
mm-hmm.
you know Amy, she's from New York, and another one of the gurus in this
mm-hmm.
in dynamic, has some great children's books, but there's some things out there, but very limited information. I mean, yours, Baker's, Warshak's, I mean, you are in a great group of people that are putting these books out. It's just, again, getting them out there, letting people
mm-hmm.
know that they're available, and so buying your book, it's available on Amazon. Can you buy it on BeWholeCounseling.com as
yes,
well?
Yes, you can go straight, and you can go onto my website, and what will happen is you can, you know, you can click on the link for it, and it'll take you right to Amazon.
Okay. Good, 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 good. And if you're in St. Augustine, Florida, it's funny. There's so many great, great people in Florida that I can recommend. You know, and again, I go back to Wyoming or Montana. There's nobody, but I can tell you, 10 people in Florida. And now I'm so glad to have you in Northern.
Oh, thank you.
Florida that I can refer to. How do people get a hold of you in St. Augustine if they're looking for someone that can help them in their journey through the divorce process?
Well, again, they can just go to my website, bewholecounseling.com. My phone number is area code 904-461-3313. And either one of those ways, call or contact me and I'll get it immediately.
Well, Monkey in the Middle Divorce Series. Make sure you put in Divorce Series if you're Googling and looking for it, because a lot of other things come up. So we need to get that Divorce Series in there. And this is
yeah, there's a lot of cute
this.
Monkey books out there, but they're not
there
dealing with divorce. Yeah.
There's no monkey involved at all in this. No monkey.
Yeah.
But Max is there, and Marley is there, and Miss Daisy is there, and the parents are there, and something you should take a look at if you are going through divorce. I've read these books. I think they're amazing. The illustrations are incredible. And the fun book / we're going to say workbook, because that's mm-hmm. really what they are. They are incredible pieces of information that can really help you through this divorce process. So I advocate highly for anybody. And if you know somebody who and you can purchase this for them, do it. It's the best investment you'll ever make in a child's life. So please, take a look at Monkey in the Middle Divorce Series. Jonty, I want to thank you so much for being here tonight.
Well, and thank you so much. I learned quite a lot, too.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. We try to do that here on Family Matters. And I want you to keep me posted on how you're doing and how the books are coming and if another one is coming out soon so we can highlight that again on the show.
Oh, I definitely will.
I look forward to hearing from you. You have a lovely week. And I just hope that you all will tune in again to hear interesting things about divorce and children and all of the things that are happening in the United States and globally, and that we can all make a difference if we get to do it. So I'm Jill Ajizi. This is Family Matters. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jill.
Bye.
Hey, thank you so much.